That dreidel too.
Yes, Popsky formed this this private army and finally wrote a book called Private Army, and he was operating right to the end of the Desert Campaign and indeed through the Italian campaign, and did a lot of good work, I understand.
Did you see much of Brigadier Bagnold?
No, I didn't see him at all. While I was with the Long Range Desert Group, he'd already left by the time I joined, which was round about September-October time, 1941, and Guy Prendergast was commanding the group at that time.
Can you tell me more about your work as a navigator?
Well, having acquired the skill, it was fairly routine, really. You had to keep your wits about you. You had to record everything that happened, every turn of the wheel, every new direction. And you had to know precisely where you were at any moment during the day, because you never knew when you were going to be attacked, and it was most important to know exactly where you were. Apart from that, there isn't a great deal to tell. I had a gun to look after as well. Twin Vickers K guns, I think they were, most of the time. I remember firing these things outside Hon on one occasion when we were attacked first of all by a Ghibli aircraft and then two little Italian CR-42s. But I was never a particularly good shot against moving targets, and I don't know whether I was very effective. Certainly they kept flying. But as a navigator, you're just a member of the team and you're relied upon by the skipper and the entire patrol. And, well, so long as you did your job, nobody worried you. There was a second navigator always.
You mentioned the air attacks. Were you often under air attack in the desert?
Yes, I suppose so. That was the thing we feared most. And whenever we heard an aircraft and we were on the move, whoever heard the aircraft first would start waving a flag about and the whole patrol would stop, so that there were no columns of dust rising up to guide the aircraft. But usually when we were spotted by an enemy aircraft, they assumed that we were friendly to them and just passed on. It was only when we were in a sensitive position, such as outside Hon, where when they knew very well that there was an LRDG patrol about, that we were liable to be attacked very dangerously.
Presumably you were very vulnerable to air attack with there being no cover.
Yes, that's right. We usually used to make for a hill if ever we were attacked, the nearest hill. And put it between us and the sun so that the aircraft would always like to dive out of the sun, you see, wouldn't be able to do so because of the hill. There were certain tactics which you always had to take.
Such as?
Well, hiding under hills. And if you couldn't do that, and you were caught on the move, you would have to zigzag. And then it would be very difficult to reply to the aircraft, because a gun or on the back of a truck, bumping over the desert and zigzagging away, just wasn't able to fire accurately.
So if you were attacked by aircraft, you'd stay in your vehicles rather than abandon them and disperse?
Well, it depended on the circumstances. If each individual crew of the truck thought that it would be the best plan to fire back, then we would. If it was difficult, then we would abandon the vehicle. I've done both in my time. If you're in a good firing position, then you would stay with your vehicle and fire back, because attack is always the best form of defence. But if you were cornered, then there was good cover nearby, then you'd jolly well take the cover.
Can you tell me more about this business around Hon, exactly what you were doing there?
Yes, this was while David Lloyd Owen was away from the patrol, and we were under the command of another chap who wasn't with us very long, Spicer, that was his name, and we had approached Hon to... We were quite close to Hon and were hiding up in a wadi there, and the idea was to see what the possibility was of attacking the airfield there. I was ordered to stay with the trucks, and only one jeep with, I think, four or five men on board went actually up to Hon itself. So I don't know precisely what happened in Hon, but they had a good look at the place. But exactly what happened, I can't remember precisely. I'm sorry for all this can't remember business, but it is a long time ago. The enemy must have found out that we were there, and the next thing we knew was that we had these planes descending upon us.
When was this?
Gracious me, when was David Lloyd Owen wounded? That was in Kufra, after the Tobruk raid, of course. So it would have been September, October time, 1942, and the Hon raid was shortly after that.
How do you spell Hon?
H-O-N. Yes.
Where is it?
Hon is fairly well north, in a group of oases with Zella, Seba, Wadden, Hon. I think there's a place called Sukna, I'm not sure. It's not very far south of the coast, and in fact we used it as a base later on. The Italians were exploiting it, rather. They'd built a lot of houses for their colonists, and they intended, I believe, to attempt to make the desert flower there. Zella was also a base that we had later on. That was when the front was moving up west quite a lot.
What did you think to being in the desert? Was it a pleasant or unpleasant place to be, as far as you personally were concerned?
Depended largely on the weather. In the summer, when it was very hot and when there was wind blowing, I didn't stand up to it particularly well. But the scenery was marvellous, and in the winter you could really enjoy it. It wasn't just all sand, you know. There are all kinds of different surfaces to travel on. There was the Syria, for instance. It was called the Kalancho Syria. There's also a Kalancho Sansi. Now, the Syria was mile after mile of perfectly smooth, hard sand. I've seen a truck going along at 60 miles an hour across the Syria with nobody in the driving cab at all. We weren't supposed to do it, of course, but a driver would set his hand throttle and the truck would just go. And we'd know very well that we weren't going to hit any bumps, so there was no obstacle for mile after mile. And all four members of the crew would get onto the back of the truck and just let it go. It was extraordinary. But at other times, of course, going through the sand, that was a different matter altogether. We often had to dig our way and sand tray our way through the sand all day long, and that was quite exhausting. Other times you'd have to zigzag all day with through the rocks and up and down wadis and steep slopes both up and down, and you'd have to pick your way through the rocks. You'd have to stop the vehicle, and somebody would have to walk out in front to pick a way forward. And it wasn't easy. So the variety of going, as we called it, in the desert was really tremendous.
Were you bothered by pests or animals?
No. Only on one occasion were we bothered by flies, and this was when we were on a road watch. We were watching the track between Mekelle and Missus, which runs round the south of the Jebel Akhdar. And it was a sort of shortcut, which we thought the enemy was using to take troops and armour up to the front. And the battles had passed to and fro across this area many times, and the flies were downright impossible. There were places where the ground was heaving with maggots, and there were so many flies that they would fight for position round your cup of tea or your plate of food or whatever it is you were trying to take in. I made a special little anti-fly device with my Arab headdress. I sewed a piece of mosquito net down each side of the material part of the headdress, so that my face was completely covered by mosquito net, and I would put my cup of tea or my plate under the mosquito net to exclude all the flies. Otherwise you'd be eating and drinking flies. It was absolutely dreadful.
When you say the ground heaving with maggots, yeah. Over what kind of area?
Oh, just an area where perhaps food tins had been buried, or we didn't investigate. There might have been bodies buried under there for all we knew. But it was, whatever it was breeding flies at an alarming rate.
You keep mentioning these sand trays. What exactly were they?
Well, a sand tray was made of metal, about 6 feet long by perhaps a foot wide, and made of stout metal, slightly curved in section for strength, but for lightness there would be holes about an inch across all over the sand tray. And if a truck got stuck in the sand, you'd have to dig a channel in front of the wheels, the driving wheels especially, put a sand tray in the channel that you dug, and then try to drive the truck up onto the channel and thus get out of the soft sand. If the soft sand was very extensive, you'd have to use a number of pairs of sand trays and make a little road for the truck. And if it was particularly bad, you'd have to put sand trays in front of both the back wheels and the front ones. In other words, make a little track for the truck until you were well out of the sand. But it wasn't quite as simple as that, of course. Sometimes you had to dig very deeply, because the truck would very frequently sink in the sand right up to the differential. And sand is not easy to dig. It's very dry, and when you try to dig a hole with it, the sand all round would simply pour back into the hole. So it was quite hard work, especially in the summer.
You talked about General Loydoyen being wounded. Mm. Were you ever wounded yourself in the desert?
No. I was very lucky indeed. He was wounded in Kufra after the Tobruk raid, and the Germans sent over 8 aircraft to bomb the place. They bombed the Italian fort at Kufra, which was up on a hill, but of course the fort was the last place where we would think of staying, and we were camped in the trees all over the rest of the oasis. And these aircraft, having dropped their bombs on the fort, finished off their bombing run over the trees. And we had just come back from a patrol to Brook and all the other patrols, and the guns were still mounted on the vehicles, and we shot down 6 out of the 8. But David Loydoyen was unfortunate in getting in the way of one of these shells. It's said that he was hit by a ricochet from one of our own guns. Whether this is so or not, I don't know, but it was a nasty wound. It caught him across his back and injured his arm. And he was carted off to hospital very quickly after that. And there was another chap called Bob Harkness who was wounded at the same time. Nobody killed.
If you weren't wounded, were there times in the desert when your life was seriously at risk?
Well, yeah.
Any specific incidents?
Aircraft, mostly, you know. That was the first time I'd ever heard rounds from an enemy gun spattering into the ground round me. That was at Horn in particular, when there were these CR-42s diving at us. That's a very frightening experience. I suppose there was another occasion when we were doing a reconnaissance south of Tripoli, and there were armoured cars in the vicinity, but we kept well out of their way. If we hadn't spotted them first, it might have been nasty. But, of course, it's a risk you take, isn't it?
Apart from enemy action, were there any occasions where your life was in danger because of being stranded in the desert?
Oh, no. No, we never got lost. The training was too good. Bagnall's basic training on how to look after yourself in the desert was far too good. I was fortunate in never being in a patrol that was so badly shot up that we were without transport. This did happen, and chaps were faced with the task of walking back to their base, which they very frequently did. But fortunately, I was never in that position. I was never without transport, so it was always reasonably comfortable.
You've described several operations. You started off with the capture of this fort at Gatafia. Mm. You've talked about the Tobruk raid and the raid on Hon. Mm. Are there any other specific operations that stick out in your mind that you can describe?
I've got a bad memory, you know. There were patrols happening all the time. We were never in a base for very long. There was the occasion when we were doing the reconnaissance south of Tobruk. To see whether there was any enemy activity out in the desert south of Tobruk, in the area of El Adam. And suddenly a figure rose up in front of us, and a little lone figure, and he turned out to be an Indian who had escaped from a prisoner of war camp in Tobruk. And he was he didn't have any clear idea as to what he was trying to do, but there it was. He was glad to meet anybody, and he had to be convinced that we were British, even when we gave him a rifle to for himself. He didn't really believe we were British, and finally we delivered him back to his unit, which was way back in the Nile Valley. I think this was when we it was when the army was driven back to Alamein, and we had to go right back to the Nile Valley to make a base. The base was at Fayoum at the time, and we delivered this poor little chap back to his unit, and only then was he convinced that that he really had been rescued.
This would be the summer of 42, would it?
Yes, it was before Alamein.
Mm. And do you know which unit he belonged to?
He was a Punjabi, I believe. Mm.
So presumably he would just have perished in the desert if you hadn't picked him up.
I'm pretty sure that's so.
What was the esprit de corps like in the desert group, actually in the desert?
We never thought of anything such as esprit de corps. We were all friends. Naturally, things used to wrangle, little things. But we all fitted in so well that we even stayed together when we were on leave in Cairo, or Alex. And I suppose you'd call that esprit de corps, wouldn't you? We all relied upon one another. We knew we could.
What type of little things used to irritate?
Oh dear. Just the sort of things which tend to irritate one when a small group of men is living together and in one another's pockets all the time. Somebody might assume a little too much authority, or there might be silly things connected with meals. I can't instance them at all now. By and large, we were a very happy family.
You haven't said much about the native population in the desert. Mm. Were they there, and did you have much contact with them if they were?
In the bases that we used, that is Siwa, Kufra, Zella, Hon, and Jalo, they're the only places where we would have come in contact with the people who lived there. And by and large, they used to tolerate us, you know. We would be friendly enough towards them. In Siwa, I remember in particular, we had a chap who used to clean up our billet for us. That's right, and he used to bring us fruit. Things like apricots, which were grown in Siwa, and dates. But there were always dates for the picking in Kufra and in Siwa. Not so much in Zella or Hon. It was friendly enough. We had little contact with them at all, personal contact.
How did your period in the desert come to an end?
We went as far west as Tunisia, and we did a patrol to a place called Nalout, where we met the Free French. Again, it was just reconnaissance, and this is the last patrol I can remember. After that, the entire group was brought back to Alexandria, and because our usefulness in the desert had finished. There was nothing more for us to do. The Germans had pretty well been cleared out of North Africa. There wasn't much more than mopping up to do at that time. And so we were brought back to this camp on the beach near Alexandria. And there our new role was being planned. And the new role was to be on the Greek mainland, in the Balkans, perhaps in the islands. And the plans were being formed and discussed at the time, and my role was to learn Greek. So, with a number of others, I used to attend Greek classes given by a very attractive young Greek woman called Maria Thalis. And she used to give us Greek lessons every day, which was all very pleasant. And after a number of weeks there, we were moved up into the Lebanon to the Middle East Ski School, and that was about May 1943. And we were given a ski course, and I continued studying Greek under a Greek liaison officer we'd acquired. I never knew his name more than Costa. That's all his name that I knew. And he didn't last with us very long. I think he blotted his copybook later on and was sent back, but that's a closed book to me. I don't know any details. But we did this ski course, and in the midst of that, I was in a party who were to be taken by submarine to the island of Rhodes, where we were to land and do some kind of reconnaissance job. But it never came off. We did this training with a submarine, and we did a training trip in the Mediterranean. We were in Beirut, and we embarked on this submarine with a collapsible boat lashed onto the hull of the submarine, and the idea was that the submarine would surface about a quarter of a mile from the beach, and we would all pile out and get into this boat, load our equipment into it and paddle ashore, and it was going to be my job to paddle out to sea again with this boat and stave in the bottom, make holes in the bottom with a crowbar, sink the boat and then swim ashore. So we did this in practice, landed on the shores of the Lebanon, and I paddled out to sea and with another chap, and I dived overboard and swam ashore while the other chap brought the boat back. But I remember that vividly because the moon was being eclipsed at the time, and it was quite dramatic. But it never came off. We also did some training with a thing called the Levant Schooner Squadron, who were an obscure section of the Navy.